We had a technical glitch to get started, which was just fine. Everything worked well this morning. And then, of course, as would have it, and you've already explained so well everything that's going on with the change in the golf schedule. Just the thought, Justin, as somebody who won the Open in 97, how disappointing it is in the soul. Obviously, it's way down the list of things that are important, but this thing has been going on for almost a century and a half, and to see the Open completely canceled is really a historic and, in many ways, sad moment for the entirety of the sport of golf and the home of golf, where it was created over in the UK.
It certainly is. This is the first time that they've had to cancel the Open Championship since 1945. It was canceled during World War I and during World War II. But, you know, we're in unprecedented times right now. And you know that the global golf associations trying to put together some sort of schedule, trying to predict where we're going to be in 2 or 3 months' time is so difficult. And so, mm-hmm. you know, these tentative schedules, they're tentative at best. We're hopeful that we'll get to see golf by midsummer. And, you know, if we do, the entire world will be watching just because there's so much going on in the world. I think sports is a release for a lot of people. And then specifically for the Open, Mike, it's always one of you and I both our favorite weeks of the year, yeah. having won there and now get to go back and be an analyst. It's a week that we always look forward to and something we'll miss. But knowing that, St. Andrews will still be the 150th playing in 2022 is certainly something to look forward to as well.
Every sport, Justin, is dealing with right now, how do guys stay fresh and how do ladies stay fresh for their sport? For golfers, in some states, you can go out and play. It is a built-in social distancing sport. Some folks are putting PCV in the PCV pipes in the holes. So this way you don't have to reach into the hole. The flag sticks can stay in with the rule change from last year. No rakes in bunkers, things like that. So players can go out in some states and continue to play golf. How about what the players could potentially face with all of these big events in a really short period of time, not having played for 2-3 months and then trying to ramp up and play 7 out of 8 weeks, 8 out of 10 weeks. Will that be a challenge for the players to actually pull off if we do see this schedule come to light?
I think it will be. I mean, when the change in schedule happened last year, 2019, to where the major championships were more compressed, the PGA Championship moving back to May, guys talked about trying to get their bodies right for that big stretch of golf, and you just didn't have as much time in between events. Now we're talking about having 3 major championships and the Ryder Cup in a period of about 3 months. And so it's going to take a toll on players. The guys have to start working now as far as fitness level and those things, to the point where when the season is up and rolling, they're ready to go. And then it's a whole nother mindset of trying to stay fresh mentally. Obviously, this is a period of time to do that. But it's going to be easy to for guys and on the ladies tour as well to maybe mm-hmm. put a little too much into it, a little too much excitement early. And then all of a sudden, it's easy to run out of steam towards the end of what will be a very compacted season.
Well, part of what we're going to do when we're visiting with folks is see how they're holding up. And I saw on your social media that you have resorted to your kids trying to cut your hair. It has come to that. Have that work yes. out for you? And how are you all holding up out there?
Well, you know, you can see this was in our backyard. That's where our 15-year-old daughter, Avery. I put a test subject out there first in our 13-year-old son, Luke. She did a great job for Luke.
Nice.
So I was like, okay, I'm next up in the chair. So these are the times we're in. And she volunteered to do this. This was not something that we recruited her for. She wanted to do this. She goes, Luke, you really need a haircut. And then I saw that she did a pretty good job. I said, okay, I'm next. And as you can see, she did a pretty decent job. It's hard to make this look good. And she did it.
TV worthy. Yeah, it's TV worthy. We might as well all have a little laugh along the way as we're doing all this. Hey, thanks for hopping on last minute notice. Thanks for taking over as host. Anytime you want to host the show, feel free to. But good to catch up with you, pal. We'll talk soon, okay?
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate what you're doing.
Thanks, man. All right, Peter King's going to join us here right now. He was scheduled to be our leadoff hitter on the show with all the news. And in our shop, when it's Monday, it's football morning in America. It always means we check out Peter's column. Peter, how are you holding up in all of this? I thought you said something interesting at the very end of your column. It's the off season, and in some ways, it feels like you're working as hard as ever.
Well, Mike, what's interesting, if you made it to the end of my column, you deserve combat pay, because that's the longest column I've ever done in an off-season column. It's just, how is it possible that this is the off-season? There's just way too much going on. But I think what's going on right now, Mike, is that we're dealing with the draft, not only preparing teams preparing for the draft, but preparing for it in an in a historic way. You know, it's never happened like this before. And preparing for it, you know, obviously, even though in a different way, you've got to be ready to draft in 17 days. And now the networks even are preparing for it in a different way. And could we have Roger Goodell doing the picks from his house in Bronxville, New York? So it's all pretty weird.
It's all straight. Rich Eisen used to work at ESPN, so he can work and cover along with the ESPN guys if the NFL Network and ESPN does one package broadcast, which would make a lot of sense given everything that we're up against here. Peter, let me take some of these issues in order, and let's start with the draft and the things you were talking about in your column. The Indianapolis Colts have been really good about pulling up the shades, if you will, and seeing how things work behind the scenes. And they've done this, and they allowed you to do it a little bit, with how they're preparing for the draft spread out around the Indianapolis area and beyond. Take some folks inside if they haven't read the column yet.
Well, Mike, I mean, basically, I give you an example of how the Colts are doing their business. All of their scouts, all their assistant coaches who need to be together at this time of year, either preparing for the draft on April 23 or preparing for the start of minicamp with a new quarterback, Phillip Rivers, which begins on April 20th. I think those two things are vitally important, and yet they're doing it in a collection of Zoom virtual meetings. And on these webcasts that they do, in essence, you've got one coach in Corinth, Mississippi. You've got one coach in upstate New York. You've got a couple of scouts out in California. You know, here's Parks Frazier. He's in Corinth, Mississippi. He's the offensive quality control guy. And so here's what is going on, basically. A guy like Chris Ballard, the GM of the Colts, and Frank Reich, the coach of the Colts, are having to tell their guys, hey, look, it's the same for all 32 teams, and there are no excuses. But last Thursday, the Colts basically had all of their coaches basically come into one Zoom meeting, 19 coaches on their staff, and they talked all about the defensive tackle crop, and they all made their comments about what should be the order of their guys in this draft coming up on April 23rd.
So, Peter, we're so used to all these teams coming together. Let's go to a pro day. Let's fly a guy in, all of that stuff. There's technology jumping in there. You point out many of the privacy issues, Zoom bombing that has come up over the last couple of weeks, have some folks really concerned. And that's the point I want to go to. We're going to have a virtual draft, whether you can allow five or six people from a team to be in one place. There's going to have to be equity for all 32 teams. I thought some real concerns were raised about having each team with their own virtual draft room, because how do you know how secure it's going to be? And if somebody might scoop one of your picks and your information, which they hold so close to the vest in a regular draft situation.
Well, Mike, Kevin Demoff, the COO of the Rams, who's very technologically savvy, told me last week that he is concerned with some of the encryption on these webcasting services. And so I think the NFL over the next 2 weeks is going to do a lot of investigation into the security of things like Zoom. I think they trust more Microsoft Teams, which obviously Microsoft is a partner, you know, of the National Football League. And I would be surprised. I think you're going to see more and more organizations around the league probably change over to Microsoft Teams because the encryption on Microsoft Teams, I'm told anyway, is a little bit better.
It's a fascinating technology plunge that the league is taking. I encourage you to read Peter's column. We could spend the whole hour discussing all the issues that came up there, including fans in the stands. How do you open new stadiums? If the stands are going to be empty, construction on these stadiums in Las Vegas and in Southern California. But Peter, to one other point that you raised, this is around the time we start getting close to the NFL schedule coming out. Obviously, there are a lot of issues there. And there is the reality, as there is with all of this, that we don't know if we can get 16 games in, a full training camp, what it's going to look like. So would you imagine that the next step of this are laying out contingencies for a shorter regular season when putting together a schedule that'll come out potentially in the next month or so?
Mike, when I first heard last week that the NFL was saying essentially, hey, listen, we're not going to put out the schedule until maybe as late as May 9th this year, I thought they were giving themselves time instead of, and look, I know how Howard Katz does this. I've reported heavily on this over the last few years. Howard Katz, right. Mike North, Ani Bose, their entire team, I know how they work. And they're basically going to be done with a workable, usable, good schedule, maybe even now or in the next few days. But I believe, and this is not set in stone, but I believe that what they're doing right now is also getting makeable 12 and 14 game schedules. And Mike, the way I figure it is, the NFL on a 12 game schedule without a bye could start as late as October 18. And if that happens, either with or without fans in the stands, that still gives the NFL a chance to have a representative season along with keeping the playoff schedule on course to start on the weekend of January 9 and 10.
Well, if this was a little teaser for the entire Football Morning in America column, it always ends with a haiku. So why don't you share that with everybody if you don't mind?
I got to like my haiku today, Mike, because as I know, having a dog, my dog Chuck, stay home. Please stay home. Okay, you can walk the dog. Otherwise, sit. Stay.
I love it. And I keep saying, Peter, that we should have a dog Olympics after this because all of our dogs are more fit than they ever have been. The column is Football Morning in America. It's every Monday on NBCSports.com. And catch it where you catch your social stuff. Peter, thank you. We'll talk to you along the way. Appreciate you hopping on.
Thanks very much, Mike.
From Peter King to the slide job duo, if you will, Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Chris Collinsworth, our NBC Sports family, going to join us as we continue Lunch Talk Live here on NBCSN.
One of the greatest finishes in NASCAR history.
Wheel that thing, brother!
This is crazy.
There's the gap between one and two.
Larson by three.
What kind of run does Kyle Larson get off of this corner?
Larson to the bottom, trying to take the lead away.
Slide job. Slide job.
So, Guru, what are the answers?
Slide job. Slide job. Slide job. Slide job. Slide job.
The two guys known for the slide in our NBC Sports
We're
family.
Out, man. We can't get
That's
better. That's
pretty
than
good.
That. We're done. That's it.
That's it. You're darn right. Chris Collinsworth and Dale Earnhardt Jr. join us. Chris slid in on Sunday nights, and Dale, when he got his debut in the booth for NASCAR for us, came up with slide job. And then, Jr., I saw you the next week. I joined the gang at Daytona, and everybody was walking around yelling slide job to you. That's got to happen when you're out of tracks, when people yell that one famous line that you authored in your very first show. People yell that as much as they yell, hey, Jr., to you sometimes.
Yeah, that turned out to be quite a thing. I was a little surprised or taken aback by how many people have picked up on that and continue even today, telling me that, you know, that was a great call. But I, you know, I just was having so much fun. And I think that I have to say, you know, my booth mates did a great job. Burton, Letarte, Rick, Allen, they all did such a great job of making me feel so comfortable. I literally just fell into a moment where it was like sitting on the couch with my buddies talking about what we were seeing on TV, you know, watching the race. And it just, you know, it's just the moments where you kind of get into what you got to love what you're doing, love what you're watching. And I was certainly, you know, enamored with everything that was happening on the track in that moment. It just kind of blurted it out. I was hoping. So we're in two booths. I was in a booth with Letarte, and Rick is in another booth with Burton, and we can see them. And I was hollering slide job to Rick. I was trying to tell Rick that's what's about to happen. Like, cause Rick's calling the last lap. That's his job. And we can get in there, you know, have a little fun, but it's his role, you know, and I'm sitting there, I'm hollering slide job to Rick, really saying, man, that's what's coming. That's what it might be, what the move is. And we never see it's that coming on asphalt. That's a dirt move. You know, you never see it on asphalt. It was crazy. Kyle Larson tried to make it work.
Well, Collinsworth, you know, now he'll never slide in next to Al the same way anymore. He'll be hearing you yell slide job in your mind. Chris, that thing picked up such momentum on social media. When did you get wind of it?
Somebody actually put it to like a soccer great moment. And there was a bar, and God only knows where the bar was, but it was probably 10,000 people in this bar, and superimposed over, I assume, somebody scoring a game-winning goal in a World Cup match or something, was me sliding into the thing, and the crowd went crazy. I mean, just crazy, you know? And so I'm so stupid. I have no idea about social media and what's going on. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm watching it, and somebody shows it to me, and I was like, hey, I'm big time, man. This is good here. This is what it, and then they said, no, dummy, that was superimposed over the screen of the soccer game. But that was the first time I saw. I had no idea what was going on. And but yeah, I hear a lot about my version of it too. Absolutely.
It's so funny. Hey, just get everybody updated with how you all are holding up. And what you're up to. Dale Jr., I'll start with you. Obviously, it's a very different time. But every time I turn on this iRacing thing, you're up near the top of the lead here. You're staying busy on Sundays getting behind the wheel.
Yeah, there's a simulation, if you will, called iRacing. And you can go online on a personal computer at home and race against anybody in the country, in the world, for that matter. And I've been on that service for almost two decades now, and it's a lot of fun. And it's become so popular now that since they're, you know, we've paused momentarily of running the current cup schedule, somebody came up with a great idea, putting all the cup drivers on this platform and to broadcast the races. And it's turned out really well. We've done three so far, and we've had a lot of people tuning in. NBC, SN has a great opportunity to showcase what they can do as well. We've got Short Track Showdown coming out this week, Wednesday. And actually there's races every day this week on NASCAR America. But it's been a lot of fun using this iRacing platform and having the real drivers get on the platform. There's already a lot of them on there, but we have them all on there now and getting their input on how realistic this software and this simulation is. And there you see it. I mean, it looks real. It feels just as real when you're driving the car. Obviously, you're in the comfort of your own home. You're not in a 130-degree temperature race car vibrating and shaking around. And the crashes don't hurt. So, you know, all that's really nice. But I'm having a lot of fun with it. And it does break up the time. I mean, just for a moment, you know, while we're running these races, you almost forget everything else that's going on in the world. But we're doing good. We're Amy's doing great. She's pregnant with our second child, so that's thrown us for a unique experience compared to our first child. All the non-essential visits are canceled for the doctors, so we're not going in for those checkups, but everything's going smooth, and we just can't wait for everything to get back to normal.
Well, congratulations on that. We wish you guys all the best. And then, Chris, on your end with Pro Football Focus, your company, you guys, this is a heavy draft season. So I would imagine that even though we are stopping all the external stuff, from a work perspective, you're staying probably as busy as you would be this time of year anyway.
Well, they had a two-on-two volleyball game outside our condominium window the other night, and I called it. I opened the window and I announced it. I'm getting desperate. You know, you got to do something. You got to analyze something. But yeah, you're right. The draft goes on, and it's one of the interesting part about the NFL, and you probably know this as well as I do, is that nothing's really changed. You know, free agency was right on schedule. They did that. So I had work, and PFF had work to do with everything that was going on with the draft. Excuse me. And then you roll right into the draft, and now I'm studying all these guys and getting ready for that and trying to figure out who's going where, when, and how. And then you try and figure out whether or not we're going to play football by the time we get around to football season, because I think it's a really legitimate question as to, you know, exactly what happens with the beginning of the season.
Yeah, well, I'm going to shut my end of this down for a second. Junior, you're as big a Redskins fan as I know, so why don't I let you ask Collinsworth Washington Redskins question here as you guys try to get this franchise turned back around.
Yeah, you know, I think the question everybody has is, what will they do with that pick? Will they take Chase Young, or is there real – I mean, there's always smoke and mirrors, but is there any real consideration from the Redskins to trade back?
Yeah, I think so, because of the value of that pick. If you want, and I've been practicing this, Tua Tagovailoa, that was not that good, but that was close. If you want that guy,
you got time.
Yeah, Tua. If you want Tua, you got to jump up there somewhere, right? So a lot of people are assuming it's Detroit that they're going to make that trade with. But if I were the Washington Redskins and Daniel Snyder at this point right now, I would be telling everybody I could tell how much I love Tua. Because if they want to make that deal, I want them coming up and making that deal with me. And I want that sort of optionality that he's – because if you just assume that Chase Young is going to be the pick – now all of a sudden you're basically making it easy. Now you make the deal with Detroit instead of Washington.
Yeah, I find that pretty interesting.
Hey, Chris, tell Junior. Go ahead, Junior.
Yeah, I just, you know, you go ahead, Tua, buddy. You know, there was conversation about them taking Tua and like legitimate, you know, intention to maybe draft him. And I guess for Redskins fans and everybody out there, what do you think Tua is in his recovery from that hip injury?
I mean, how do you know, right? And it's even worse this year because they can't get them on campus to have their own doctors take a look at them. And so it adds to the intrigue. You've got Dwayne Haskins, who was good last year. You know, I mean, he had his moments. When you compare him to the other rookie quarterbacks that were playing, he was right in there. And that's going to take a little while for him to get up and running. But I think maybe the Chase Young question is a big one, too. Is he really one of those Lawrence Taylor generational pass rusher kind of guys that you're going to feel awfully stupid if you trade him out? And I mean, conceivably, you could even trade back to 4 or 5, depending on how the rest of the draft ends up going, and still have a chance. Mm-hmm. You've got to think that the Detroit's probably going to try and get a cornerback. I don't know if they've traditionally, Matt Patricia and Bill Belichick, they don't always base what they want to do around a pure edge pass rusher. And then what happens at 4? You don't know with the Giants. Do they end up taking one of those big tackles that are on the board that are great players? And so you don't know exactly how that. So could Chase Young fall? You could still get him at 5. I mean, that's what makes it fun, right? I mean, the draft is so great. Nobody knows. Nobody knows what's going to come out of this thing. If I had to bet my house today, I would guess Chase Young goes to Washington. That's who I think.
Guys, we only have a few seconds, so like 20 seconds each. You're both multi-generational in terms of the family business. Dale, your granddad, your dad, obviously in racing. Chris, Jack, your son is on our team again here at NBC. We're so psyched about that. At a time of family, where family is so important, Junior, I'll let you go first, then Chris. just a sentence or two about how much family really means to all of us, especially at a time like this when things have gotten so difficult for a lot of folks to deal with, and how that that family spirit kind of helps us all get to tomorrow, day in, day out. Junior, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, nothing's greater for me than to go into Isla's bedroom in the morning. She's already in there in the mornings talking to herself, and this morning she was singing Let It Go from Frozen. And she's just about to be two here in April. And so to be able to get up in the morning, go in there and get her out of bed, and spend the mornings and the rest of the day with her, has been really great. I'm kind of made for this stay at home stuff. I was a bit of an introvert as it was. So I'm really enjoying the time I'm having with my family.
Yeah, me too, Mike. And first of all, congratulations. I got a chance to meet your wife, Amy, and a Kentucky cheerleader, just like my wife, Holly, was. And we're not having babies. We're having grandbabies around here. We got our second one on the way as well. So we're pretty pumped about all of that. But I also want to remember just how tough life is for so many people right now, and our friends in New York. And it's just devastating to watch, and the medical people and the delivery people and everybody who's contributing and risking their own life trying to do this. We certainly want to start with them and what they mean to all of us at this particular point. Sports is, I don't know, sort of a back burner thing at this point when you start to consider. But as a man of a little bit of faith, too, I do find it interesting that sort of the peak of this thing in New York City is going to come on Easter Sunday. So we all hope and pray for the best for everybody, and hopefully it all begins to go the other way here real soon.
Amen. You both are two of our favorite people, and thanks for doing this. This is fun. We'll stay in touch. Thanks for hopping on, guys. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good to see you, too.
See you, Dale.
See you.
Chris Collinsworth, Dale Jr. When we come back, Mike Krzyzewski, the Duke coach. This should be national championship night in college basketball. It's not. Obviously, we're keeping things in perspective, but also trying to give you a little respite as we talk. It is Lunch Talk Live on NBCSN.
If you want to do the basketball analogy, that right now we have a team that's a very powerful team, and that's the virus. And what we need to do is that we got to play a full court press. I mean, we can't let them get the ball on the ground to dribble. We just got to be all over them. I mean, that's what we really got to do, because that's the only tool we have right now. And the game, we're not even at halftime, Coach K. You know, I mean, we're just fighting it out. And then what would be really nice to continue the analogy is that if we can just hold our own, and then when we get back in the second half, just come out like blazing. And that's what we really need to do. Otherwise, that this stuff is going to really, really be very harmful to us as a society.
Those are the words of Dr. Anthony Fauci, who has really become an American hero for so many with his leadership, speaking on Mike Krzyzewski's SiriusXM radio show, Basketball and Beyond, that he does with our friend Dave Sims on a regular basis. And it's so many people from so many walks of life visiting with the man who's coached Duke for 40 seasons, 12 Final Fours, 5 national championships. And on this night when a national championship would have been crowned in Atlanta, and maybe it would have been Duke, who knows, Mike Krzyzewski is nice enough to hop on the phone and join us from Durham. Coach K, you were talking to another point guard when you were talking to Dr. Fauci. What did you find interesting in that conversation that you two had on your radio show?
Well, what an honor to have a chance to have a conversation with him, and it's an honor to be on your show. And you've been a great, great friend for a long, long time, and helped in the fight against cancer with the V Foundation, so we appreciate that. But Dr. Fauci is a stud. If it was a sports analogy, he was a point guard at Regis in New York, and he's been a point guard his whole life. I called him America's point guard because he's always delivering. He's always assisting. And, at this time, we need to listen to the experts in the field, in this field. And there's no one who is better in analyzing infectious diseases than Dr. Fauci spent his entire life doing it. So he's the most instinctive and the best, and he gave us a lot of good points on the show. It was an honor to have him on.
Show is recommended listening all the time. The conversations that people have with Coach K are just a different level. I always enjoy that. Coach, you have always been a tremendous leader, going back to your West Point days, obviously the 40 years at Duke. How do you see your role right now in all of this? I guess it's multiple. It's the Krzyzewski family, your Duke family, and then your visibility as one of America's most recognizable sports figures. How are you seeing your role right now?
Well, I think the very first way everyone should see their role is that they're part of the United States team, you know, that we're all team members from everywhere. And what we do and how we are responsible and how we individually handle what's going on and deal with it is fundamentally simple. But if it's all put together, like on any team, if everyone's doing their job, that team has a better chance to win. Obviously, with my family, we have 10 grandkids that live right here, my three daughters and their husbands. We don't see them. I mean, we put them up on FaceTime, and there's calls and texts and all that kind of stuff. But we do our social distancing and do all the things that are necessary. For my Duke team, and one, I'm on the athletic department. I'm on the Duke University team, so follow their orders, you know, whatever they're doing. As a leader, sometimes it's good to be a team member and understand what it is to be a team member. But I'm responsible for my group. I just spent the entire morning. Each morning I have a conference call, a Zoom conference call with my staff to go over everything with our kids and what we're doing, you know, our players, and then with my Duke staff, my infrastructure. And this morning had a long talk with my medical team to go over contingency plans based on whether or not we know there's not going to be a first session of summer school. What do we do with our guys? What do we do if there's no second session? Because we, you know, that's a big thing as far as physical preparation, and to come up with contingency plans. And one thing I'd like to mention, Mike, you know, during this time, the NCAA, they made a great decision in what they've done thus far. But as we're moving forward, we need to really be unbelievably flexible and access. You know, I worry about not just the physical stuff with our players, but and our students, but the mental and the suicide. You know, we've had a couple suicides here in the Durham community, Duke students, and you know, when you have, you know, this, what's going on, you know, where you're spending a lot of alone time, the more access we can have as coaches to workouts, to structure, to see our kids face to face, and let that go through the summer. We need to look at that access to the student athletes, and also physical workouts that can be done at home. I think that would really help.
You've been a leader, for talking so long in that area. No. You can talk as long as you want. You know that, pal, because you share so much. You've been a leader in your community. Your players, watch what Zion Williamson did down in the New Orleans area, paying arena workers. There have been so many different things that we could discuss here. If you can just leave us in our last minute or so with this. There are a lot of us who are leading in ways we never thought. And you always said that, yes, you're a coach, but you always wanted to be a teacher, a high school teacher and coach at the soul, at the crux of what you've done over the years. Can you provide us, all of us, with some leadership advice when we don't know what's at the other end of the tunnel? We don't know the timing. We're trying to find ways to inspire, but find authenticity in that inspiration. And you've had great words to gold medal teams and championship teams. What words can you leave the leaders of our country as we deal with this crisis right now from your perspective?
Well, the very first thing is I wish on a daily basis we wouldn't have two-hour press conferences. I wish, you know, people don't hear for a long time. You know, so if it's something important, say it right away. And also follow it up. I think in leadership, you have to be able to speak so your people hear you, but they have to see, you know, and so graphs and, you know, Governor Cuomo has done a great job of this and for us hearing and seeing. And then the third and maybe the most important thing is, how do we inspire? How do we make people feel what you hear and see? And if you can have those three things, then we own it. And whether it be with your own families, your own business teams, your own communities, how do we hear, see, and feel? And then how do we work together where we own this thing? In other words, we're all part of the solution here. And that's why we need specific instructions and listening to our scientific and medical community. And the last thing, the troops on the front line are healthcare providers. Everyone who is there, the nurses, the people who feed, who clean and whatever, understand that they're going through combat that's never been done before, because they're not only doing it on the front lines at the hospitals. When they come home, there is fear that they cannot interact with their families. These are amazing heroes, and whatever we can do to help them, and also to thank the grocery people, the pharmacists, the people who deliver, say thank you. Again, you don't have to hug them. Don't hug them. Keep your distance. But understand that these are the people who are keeping us going. And we'll come out better, and we'll come out doing some new things as a result of this. But we need to work together, obviously, to beat this horrific virus.
So often your words have been winning words. Let's hope those are, too. Best to Mickey and the Duke family. Thank you, Coach K. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, Mike.
Mike Krzyzewski, 5-time national champion coach on championship night, and, of course, 3-time Olympic gold medal head coach as well. Talk about leaders. Russell Wilson, quarterback, Seattle Seahawks. He joins us as Lunch Talk Live continues on NBCSN. Well, you want to get a sense of how the Super Bowl 48 winning quarterback is staying in shape for the season? Found a pretty good workout partner for his future and future's future. Russell Wilson, never missed a start as Seattle Seahawks quarterback, and he joins us now here on Lunch Talk Live. Russell, it's a pretty good training partner you found there.
Hey, he's getting ready. He's getting ready for Super Bowl. I don't know what it would be. I guess it'd be Super Bowl 60 something. And I'm getting ready for the next one, hopefully. But it's crazy times, obviously, Mike, as you know. Congrats on your new show and everything too, by the way. You know, you're inspiring lives from a distance, and it's good.
Appreciate that. We appreciate that. How's your family holding up? How are things going out there?
Everybody's doing great. Sierra's pregnant right now, so she's we're trying to keep her safe as possible. Meanwhile, we're getting our workouts in. We're training. We're staying active as much as we can, you know, inside the house. But you know, we're trying to just keep people going, keep people encouraged.
Well, Sierra's given us future there, and you got future all trained up. So we look forward to great things from you guys, and we wish you all the best and health. You jumped in with some of our friends at Wheels Up, too, to really get started on this reaching out, feeding America as this pandemic is growing. That was out for folks who saw it last week. For those who didn't catch it, Russell, can you explain what you all are trying to do, and maybe more importantly, where the inspiration came from on your end?
Well, the whole idea, you know, obviously Seattle, you know, it's a worldwide pandemic, but in Seattle alone, you know, it's been heavy, you know, and just our hometown, a place that we love so much and so dearly. So we really wanted to be able to give back to our community, make a difference there. So we were able to give 1 million meals, which, you know, I think hopefully had an impact. You know, we can all do what we can, you know, not everybody can do the same thing, but the reality is that we can all do something. And that's the most important thing is serve, love, and care. And I think that if we can do those things, then, you know, we have a chance. And so the cool thing has, you know, for us is, you know, other people have been inspired with us too as well. You know, there's so many people doing great things. We're able to, you know, partner up with Wheels Up to do Meals Up. Our goal was to hit 10 million meals. Kenny D, the CEO of Wheels Up, thought, you know, got inspired by what we were able to do and some other people too as well. And so we've been able to, give a lot of meals away and be able to do some cool things with Feeding America. It's such a great program. I believe it's like 98% of the finances that go to them, the resources that go to them, they use it for the actual meals. So that's a positive note. And so, with our foundation too, the Why Not You Foundation, we've been able to do some other amazing things too, with some great things in Seattle with Luvo and different companies and people that we've been able to be partners with.
It's interesting. You're born someplace, you go to college for you at two great institutions, and yes. Then you end up there in Seattle. And you had no idea where you were going to get picked, an inkling, of course, some interest. And now you end up being thrust in Seattle, and here you turn around less than a decade later, and you're as identifiable as almost anyone in that community and will be connected to that community for quite some time. As an athlete, can you share with those of us who don't know that feeling what it's like to all of a sudden look around and say that, wow, my voice here is as loud as anyone in this area that I really didn't know much about 10 years ago?
Well, you know, I think it's a great point. You know, when I got to Seattle, I wanted to be able to make a difference in some way, some fashion, you know. And, my dad was constantly in hospitals. He was always sick. You know, he was it wasn't easy for him. Diabetes. He had passed away because of diabetes and had a coma and everything, suffered several strokes. And so I know what it's like to be in hospitals. I know what it's like. My mom was an ER nurse, you know, growing up. She was in the midst of the fire, and so for me, it was about giving back. You know, it was about trying to make a difference in whatever way I possibly could. And, you know, I didn't grow up with much. I didn't have much. At one point, my family was bankrupt pretty much. And so we couldn't do much, you know. And, but people were able to give back to us and serve as much as they could. And I think that's what, you know, God put us on this earth for, is to be able to give back and love and care. And, I think about my mom. I think about other nurses and people, doctors, and, everybody who's serving right now that are in the front lines. You know, my mom's in Seattle right now, and she's helping build these portable hospitals in a way, around the community of Seattle. Wow. So people can get, wow, checked for corona and everything else. And there's so many people that are doing that. And, you know, I think about all the people that I've been able to meet, the nurses and the doctors. It's a real thing. And those people on the front lines, you know, sacrificing their lives potentially. Those are true heroes. Those people make the difference. And whatever we can do to help is what we're always thinking about with Sierra and I, and also our foundation, Why Not You Foundation. And so I think for me, you know, God's given me the opportunity to give back, and I want to continue to do that.
You know, I was feeling really good as we're watching everybody do their shows from home. A lot of TV folks, you see everybody's backgrounds. I was feeling really good about my little Masters collection here with Arnold, Jack, and Gary, and Curtis Strange, and some of my NBC stuff, and some hats, and some Olympic stuff. You've got an unbelievable collection behind you. I saw that Gretzky autograph jersey. Is there one of those, of that whole collection there, that is super special to you, that means the most to you?
Oh man, there's some good ones. Like we got Gretzky. He's one of the, obviously, arguably the greatest hockey player of all time. MJ behind us. That's a good one. I've gotten to know him over the years, and pretty, gotten to be pretty close with him. Got to know Joe a little bit too. But I would say some of my favorites, obviously Michael for sure, Joe Montana, and then these two guys right here. These two guys you know pretty well. We got Larry Fitzgerald and Drew Brees. Drew, he's become one of my really, really close friends, and same thing with Larry, two of the most respectable guys in the game, these two guys. So, you know, I got a lot of respect for them, a genuine heart for them, and how they play the game, but how they live their lives, how they impact people, how they inspire. So those two guys I really look up to in our own league in the NFL.
I love it. You beat my Golf Channel hat up here, but that's all right. Hey, thanks, Russ, for hopping on. Best to you and your bride. Hope you guys stay healthy, and we'll be in touch. We appreciate you coming on.
Mike, thanks, man. Appreciate you. And let's keep believing. Let's keep inspiring. Let's keep lifting people up. Let's keep serving. So grateful for you, man. And great job on the show. I'll have to have you on my show one day. I'll see you soon, bud.
Anytime. And he didn't say go Hawk, so I'll do it for him. When we come back, go Jeff Hawks. Burton and Steve Letard, our NASCAR guys, we're going to talk a little bit about Racing Week in America that starts tonight on NBCSN. It starts actually right after the show. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And welcome back. This is Racing Week in America here on NBCSN. So each day's got a different theme, some great racing of the past. Jeff Burton actually won his first NASCAR race in 1997. It's the first cup race in Texas. It was on this date in 1997. And Jeff and Steve Letard join us for a couple of minutes to help set the table for what starts after us and what continues here. Jeff, is it nice to go back and relive some of these old racing memories?
Especially ones that you won. Yeah, that one's really good to remember. Obviously none of us are happy about sitting at home and not seeing live events, but being able to go back in history and go revisit some of the sport's coolest races that Steve and I actually got a chance to call some of them. It actually is going to be a lot of fun today to watch some of those races.
And Steve, what are you learning as we turn the clock back and watch some oldies but goodies?
Well, I think, Mike, when you look, you know, two decades of motorsports on NBCSN, it's NASCAR, IndyCar, even some two-wheel action with some motocross, and I think I get to relive some of those races. I think in today's world, everything moves so fast, right? Society continues to chug along, and the one fortunate part, if anything can be fortunate above this awful situation, is perhaps we all get to pause and remember some of the great times we once had. I get to spend time with my family. I have a 16-year-old son who hasn't got to see many of these races, so I'm going to spend most of the afternoons over the next 5 or 6 days sitting with him on the couch, kind of reliving them, reminding him, these are the guys I got to race against. You know, whether I was a crew chief or a crew member, you mentioned Jeff getting his first win. We have some great races on tap where some of the biggest stars went to victory lane. It's going to be fun to rewatch them. With social media, we kind of get to rewatch them with all the fans.
And with technology, there's going to be the NBC Sports Esports Track Challenge Monday through Thursday night, 7 Eastern time here during Racing Week in America. Jeff, this whole concept of iRacing and trying to do things in a virtual world, how realistic is it for those of us who are going to be watching this?
Well, it fits racing perfectly because you can simulate their tracks, you can simulate the setups. A lot of hard work's gone in for years, and it's now being shown to everybody. So, listen, it's not 100% real. It's different. I guess that's the best way to say it. But the drivers are extremely competitive. I bet we'll see tonight. You know, we got 6 drivers and really a shootout where it's only 6 drivers on these racetracks, and they're going at it. And if they win one of the races, they transfer all the way to the championship on Thursday. So the competitiveness is real. The drivers, the biggest deal is you can't feel. So when you drive a race car, you feel it. You don't just see it. You actually feel it. In a simulator, it's all vision. So it takes the drivers a little while to get used to it. That's why actually the best iRacers in the world, you know, may not be the drivers that are driving the race cars, but the drivers today are doing an incredible job adapting and learning how to drive the sims.
The best thing, Mike, is very simple. It's virtual, so we can break all the rules. We could take these NASCAR Cup cars to tracks like Rockingham, to tracks like Myrtle Beach, tracks we wouldn't normally see, right? The beauty of virtual, we can make up the rules as we go.
And there's no inspection at the end. So, hey, thanks, guys. We look forward to watching. We appreciate you both hopping on with us. Hope you enjoy Racing Week in America. And thank you. We'll be doing this every day. Obviously, it's not the most important thing going on. Just a chance for you to get a break and enjoy an hour of sports conversation. See you tomorrow. For now, so long.